Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Progress.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, this 29th day of April, 2024. We have a shocking development, absolutely stunning, just in. $61 billion was just the beginning. Ukrainian President Zelensky announces 10-year funding agreement with the United States. Glory to Ukraine, he declares. Glory to Ukraine. Stunning. Absolutely stunning. The Gateway Pundit has reported the story. Here we have it. Ukrainian President Zelensky, speaking to Democrat House Leader Hakeem Jeffries, announced Sunday the U.S. and the Ukraine are working on fixing specific levels of support for this year and for the next 10. This will likely supersede President Trump's authority on the matter if it passes. As Gateway Pundit reported, Congress recently passed three bills to hand out $95 billion in foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, and other non-U.S. involved conflict zones around the world. Of the $95 billion, over $60 billion was allocated for Ukraine. A handout to Ukraine was sold to the American people as a loan. However, as the Gateway Pundit has reported, the package that Speaker Johnson announced Wednesday includes terms that will allow the president to cancel 50% of Ukraine's debt after November 15, 2024, and the remaining 50% after January 5, 2024. No wonder Joe Biden came out strongly in support of the package, since he will still be in office on those dates and in the position to repudiate all of the debt. Meanwhile, as though that were not bad enough, Revolver has another stunning story, to wit, explosive allegations the CIA is operating Ukrainian online anti-Trump troll farms to influence American voters in the 2024 election. Believe it or not, if you spent any time online, you probably stumbled on those fervent pro-Ukraine accounts that go by the name of NAFO, N-A-F-O, and sport cute little animated animal photos as their avatars. Here's one. Who thinks it's time for President Trump to go to prison? And it's got all these hush money, 34 felony counts, max 136. Class doc case in Florida, 40 felony counts, max 450. January 6th case, Washington, D.C., 4 felony counts, 55 years. Election interference case in Georgia, 13 felony counts, max 76.5. Total 91 counts, 717.5 years. Can you believe? As a matter of fact, Disgraced former Congressman Adam Crybaby Kinzinger is a proud fella at this NAFO online movement. Mr. NAFO and Kinzinger has quite a reputation for spreading loads of fake news and pro-Ukrainian propaganda. Remember when he was totally punked and fell for that hilariously phony Ghost of Kiev meme? Here he is, Adam Kinzinger. Ghost of Kiev has a name, and he has absolutely owned the Russian Air Force. Godspeed and more kills, Samuel. The memes that followed in mock Kissinger were pure gold. But the fact of the matter is, this is completely outrageous. What has become of the United States, my friends? I'm just staggered. Meanwhile, we have sent a lot of Abrams tanks to Ukraine, and guess what? They're being taken out by the Russians. Ukrainian army withdraws Abrams tanks following heavy losses. Ukrainian army has withdrawn its M1A1 Abrams tanks from frontline position due to concerns regarding their vulnerability to Russian strikes. The decision taken following heavy losses incurred in combat since mid-February. Confirmation of the withdrawal was provided by unnamed American military sources, cited by the AP News Agency, one of whom observed that due to advances in Russian targeting capabilities, there isn't open ground you can just drive across without fear of destruction. Another source noted, Russian drone warfare has made it too difficult for Abrams tanks to operate without detection or coming under attack. Vice President of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Christopher Grady, provided further details on the Ukrainian Army decision, informing AP. When you think about the way the fight has evolved, massed armor in an environment where unmanned aerial systems are ubiquitous can be at risk. Now, there is a way to do it. We'll work with our Ukrainian partners and other partners on the ground to help them think through how they might use that in that kind of environment now, where everything is seen immediately. He subsequently informed reporters that tanks have been moved from the front lines and the U.S. will work with the Ukrainians to reset their tactics. Abrams were first confirmed to have been deployed by drone footage released on February 23rd. Followed 3 days later by the confirmed destruction of the first tank. Russian sources have also claimed, alongside the second kill, a tracked mine-clearing vehicle based on the Abrams chassis was also destroyed. At least 5 of the 31 tanks have been destroyed so far, several others disabled. Footage released on March 6, confirming the destruction of the 3rd Ukrainian Army Abrams, notably saw one destroyed with a shot from the main cannon of a Russian Army T-72B3 tank, rather than by missile or drone as with previous kills, which represented a valuable public relations victory for the Russian tank industry. Ukraine's Western supply tank classes have all taken losses within days of their first deployment to the front lines, even when deployed in limited numbers, including the Leopard 2A6 German tank that first saw combat in June of 2023 and the Challenger 2, a UK tank that first saw combat in September of that year. In other words, all the Western tanks are falling to the Russian defense. You already heard what's in this latest arms package. Absolutely shocking. Here's something a bit
today
more.
Is April 28th, 2024. The conflict in Ukraine continues. Recently, over the last week, we have heard the news that the United States has not only approved of the $61 billion in spending for Ukraine, but it has already put together its first arms package in months now. I'm going to go over that entire arms package in detail, item by item. But before I do that, let's just take a look at the map, livesuamap.com. This is a pro-Ukrainian live map. And let's just see what things look like on the ground at the moment. Now, if you were listening to people talk about the $61 billion in aid, you might have been led to believe that the situation was going to turn around overnight. But in reality, it most likely is not going to turn around at all, and most certainly not overnight, not in a couple of weeks, not even in months. Now, we're watching Russia continue carrying out missile and drone strikes all across Ukraine, from north to south, from east to west, all of these major cities where there are infrastructure and military targets. And then, of course, along the line of contact, even though this map in particular is not showing any icons when I most recently opened it, they have these older ones right here. This is also from today. And if you look at the line of contact, this is just west of Donetsk and Avdiivka, where Russian forces took the very heavily fortified city, and they have been making progress along at least two, possibly you could argue three axes since taking Avdiivka. If you look at the map from my last update, you can actually see the difference. Just 5 days, you can see the difference. Russian forces having taken more territory, consolidating control along these major defensive positions. I wouldn't call them major towns. They're relatively small towns, but they're major Ukrainian defensive positions that Ukrainian forces are trying to hold after losing Avdiivka. And if we zoom out, we can see Russian forces making progress west. And what are they doing? They're going to be cutting off places like Vugledar, which Russia has been trying to take for many months, putting pressure on it at least. And also here, Seversk. We've seen progress all around and toward Seversk. And we've seen increased activity along the line of contact near Kharkov.
Excellent report. Meanwhile, Laurie Johnson exposes the West orchestrates Israel strikes on Iran to serve the Russian agenda. Laurie is so good. This is good historian Johnson. Meanwhile, here we go.
Israel and Iran with respect to what Israel began when it destroyed the Iranian consulate in Damascus.
Oh, I think Iran clearly came out on top. Some on other programs like Alexander Mikuras described it as Iran won on points. So all of this has demonstrated that Iran has the capability to hit targets inside Israel, and that Israel does not have the ability to stop it. That's the bottom line.
Does that not burst the myth, the self-foisted myth of Israel, that the whole world, or at least the region, must fear it?
Yeah, same thing with heavyweight boxers. You know, the guy that, he's the world champion, you can't touch him, and then he gets in the ring and gets punched in the face and goes down. Israel got punched in the face. They've been acting with impunity. I mean, you know, think about this. They routinely, not occasionally, routinely carry out bombing strikes in Lebanon and in Syria. Those are sovereign countries, and Israel attacks them routinely. And nobody in the world says, hey, wait a second. This is a violation. You know, our international rules-based order would say, that's a violation of international law. But it's Israel. Give them a break. Give them a pass. And they had been assassinating a number of IRGC commanders in the failed belief that if you kill enough of these people, it will clear up your security issue, make you safer. And it has done just the opposite. So once they hit that embassy annex and the consulate and killed the number of people that they did, Iran was intent on retaliating, and they did so in a very, very sophisticated way. It was not unsophisticated. And when the entire attack was over, despite Israel's claim, oh, they didn't put a glove on me. Yeah, why is your left eye swollen? You know, it was that kind of thing.
Didn't Well, first of all, hasn't Israel assassinated Iranian civilians, scientists, in Iran?
Well, that's our belief. You always start with the cui bono, who benefits? The assassination of these Iranian nuclear physicists, people associated with the nuclear energy program in Iran, started back in 2010. And there are at least in a period of 2 years, about four or five. So it's generally assumed that Israel, in fact, some off moments, Israelis have taken credit for it. So
remember, all seven of the hypersonic missiles that Israel received from Iran hit their targets, taking out two airfields and a command and control center, killing 44 Mossad IDF. Big deal. Meanwhile, Poland and Lithuania are pledging to help Kiev repatriate Ukrainians subject to the military draft. In other words, we know Ukraine's running out of recruits. They have no one to put on the front lines. Well, here's Poland and Lithuania. Those who have fled to those countries are going to be returned. Poland and Lithuania have said they're prepared to help Ukrainian authorities return men subject to military conscription to the country so they can be put on the front lines and killed. After Kiev announced this week it was suspending consular services for such men who are now abroad. We have suggested for a long time we can help the Ukrainian side ensure that people subject to compulsory military service go to Ukraine. Władysław Konieslaw-Kamysz, Poland's defense minister, told a television channel Polsat that we did not elaborate on what mechanism would be used. Well, Ukraine has run out of forces, so they're going to need it. Meanwhile, Russia Today reports Netanyahu reacts to possible ICC arrest warrant. I like this. Namely, that an arrest warrant is being issued. Arrest warrants or other step taken by the International Criminal Court against Israeli officials will not affect the country's operation in Gaza, but will set a dangerous precedent, Prime Minister Netanyahu has warned. Earlier this week, British journalist Douglas Murray published an article in the New York Post claiming the ICC, which is investigating Hamas' incursion into Israel on October 7th, and the Jewish state's response thereto, is planning to bring individual war crime cases against Netanyahu Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and one of the country's top military commanders, most likely the chief of the general staff. Totally appropriate. Totally appropriate. Friday, Netanyahu shared Mary's article on X, formerly Twitter, insisting, as long as he is in power, Israel will never accept any attempt by the ICC to undermine its inherent right of self-defense. Of course, grandstanding as though what's going on? We didn't have, massive war crimes, mass murder, genocide taking place. The threat to seize the soldiers and officials of the Middle East, only democracy, as though it really were one. It's an apartheid state. It's not a democracy. Israel had the opportunity to decide whether to be a democracy or to be a Jewish state, an apartheid state, 5 or 10 years ago, and they voted. They decided to become a Jewish state. They are not a democracy. Thus, he adds, and the world's only Jewish state is outrageous. We will not bow to it. Israel's military operation in Gaza is, he claims, a just war against genocidal terrorists, which will continue until victory is achieved. Talk about doublespeak. There's genocide going on, but it's by Israel. Meanwhile, the Times of Israel reports, Israel, U.S., said to be working to prevent ICC arrest warrant against Netanyahu. According to reports in several Israeli media, The United States is part of a last-ditch diplomatic effort to prevent the International Criminal Court from issuing arrest warrants against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli officials. In the news site Walla, analyst Ben Kasvet writes that Netanyahu is under unusual stress over the prospect of an arrest warrant against him and other Israelis by the UN Tribunal in The Hague, which would be a major deterioration in Israel's international status. I can't wait. Netanyahu is leading a nonstop push over the telephone to prevent an arrest warrant, focused especially on the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, Kasvet writes. I dare say it ain't going to work. They can try all they want. Here's further evidence of the monstrosity of the Israeli government. Hal Turner reports, Israel has bombed the food donation center in Rafah. All airdrop food is burning. Just outrageous. Israel just bombed the food donation center in Rafah. Here's a video. This evening, heavy Israeli airstrikes on donation food in Rafah City, burning down all food donation made by air. You can see them in flames when you watch, if you have the opportunity, the video version of today's show. Strikes, all food. They want the Palestinians who remain to starve to death. I mean, that's the objective. No one's had any doubt about it. That's why they brought about such a siege on Gaza. A siege, depriving them of the opportunity to even survive, depriving them of food, water, electricity. Here we have a Press TV report about anti-Israel protests gaining momentum on U.S. campuses.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. In the United States Capitol, pro-Palestinian protesters have gathered outside of the venue of the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner in a bid to highlight the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
Here you have protesters
at the U.S. president for his support of the Israeli killing machine. They shouted slogans like shame on you and hands off Gaza. Some demonstrators performed acts symbolizing Israel's atrocities in the occupied territories as they demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Several protesters were arrested by security forces. Earlier, Palestinian journalists called for the boycott of the events. Protest was organized by Code Pink, a nonprofit organization that accuses the U.S. media of co-opting the Biden administration's involvement in the genocide. It says that it aims to raise awareness of how the U.S. media perpetuates anti-Palestine narratives while ignoring Israeli war crimes.
That's, of course, exactly right. There is a lot going on. We have a bipartisan bill now moving forward that would create anti-Semitism monitors at colleges, and I'm just disgusted by the extent to which higher education has been complicit in covering for genocide in Gaza. A pro-Israel House Democrat and Republican plan to introduce legislation creating federally sanctioned anti-Semitism monitors for select college campuses. Why it matters? It's a first bill introduced in Congress as a direct response to the pro-Palestinian protests at Rock Columbia University and other colleges in recent days. Driving the news, Representative Richie Torres of New York and Mike Lawler of New York are introducing the college oversight and legal updates mandating Bias Investigation and Accountability Act, or Columbia Act. The bill would allow the Department of Education to send a third-party anti-Semitism monitor to any college receiving federal funding and to revoke that funding for colleges that do not comply. The monitor, paid for by the school, would be charged with releasing a public quarterly report evaluating the progress a college or university has made toward combating anti-Semitism. The bill was first reported by Jewish Insider. What they're saying? My office and I have spoken with countless Jewish students from campuses across America who feel deeply unsafe, purely as a result of their religious and ethnic identity, Tory said. Jewish students told my office they feel completely abandoned by their university administrators, and they view Congress as the only avenue for accountability and safety. Now look at the lie there. Deeply unsafe purely as a result of their religious and ethnic identity? No. No one gives a damn about whether a student is Jewish or non-Jewish. No one gives a damn. The protests are against Israel. The protests are against genocide. So this is a totally corrupt bill in the works from the beginning. I'm really appalled at our government. But should I be? Absolutely not. It's what we should expect. I'm also profoundly disturbed that I'm getting reports that even Donald Trump is speaking out against the protests on the college campuses. Listen, having spent 35 years at campuses across the country, Kentucky, Virginia twice, Cincinnati, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, New College, University of South Florida, University of South Florida, Duluth Campus, University of Minnesota. I say these are the greatest moments for our students who are protesting. They are showing themselves to be real Americans who believe in the Constitution, who believe in international law, who believe in justice for all people of the world. I applaud them. And I deplore any who are speaking out against, and of course that includes the entire Biden administration, but also many officials at colleges and universities around the country, sad to say, including my own alma mater, Princeton, which has threatened to expel students who protest against genocide. How absurd is that?
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you. join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, with the latest development involving Harvey Weinstein being somehow exonerated from a rape conviction by a New York Court of Appeals, I thought it only appropriate to bring back one of my favorite guests, Dina Pollard-Sack. She's a brilliant attorney, a dynamic speaker. She's published books on the godfathers of sex abuse, Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, and Jeffrey Epstein. I wanted her update on what's going on out there in this world, which is as corrupt as it gets. Dina, welcome back to The Raw Deal.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks so much. Well, first, I want to point out that Harvey Weinstein was not exonerated. What happened was the Court of Appeals decided that evidence was let into the trial that should not have been let in. And they're called prior acts. These are situations involving similar incidents from the past that do not necessarily involve the complainants or the victims in the instant case. It's a concept that runs in tort law and criminal law, and I'm not a criminal law expert, but I am a tort law expert. And so let me explain how this works. You can never bring character evidence in other than in a defamation case when character is an issue. So evidence that someone's a jerk, evidence that they consistently say rude things to people, that can't come in a criminal or tort trial unless it bears directly on the issue, because it creates a situation where the jury is going to judge them based on their overall character, attitude, and not the facts before them. Kind of like Camus' The Stranger, you know, getting convicted on something you maybe didn't do because you're a jerk, right? So when it comes to the prior acts jurisprudence, I just went through this in a Title VII case preparing two petitions for certiorari to the United States Supreme Court, and this was directly an issue, and this is the law. Prior acts routinely come in Title VII cases because they show the employer knew or should have known. They provide notice to the employer that these acts of sexual assault, sexual harassment, sex discrimination, race discrimination were going on, and the employer knew or should have known. That's why they consistently are let in all jurisdictions except for the Fifth Circuit, who has split against all the circuits and the Supreme Court precedent in saying they don't get in. Prior acts can involve the same people as the plaintiffs involved, or they can involve other people. Again, in the Title VII context, it doesn't matter, because you're looking at notice to the employer, and that's why they're allowed in. When it comes to a criminal defendant, it's different, because now there's no notice to him as to what he's doing. I mean, in a sense, there might be, did he know the women were saying no? My answer is absolutely yes, but that's complicated because the women were reticent to say no because they wanted something from him. So that's where the gray area comes in, where he actually claims and has always claimed that he thought it was consensual. But if you look at some of the things the women said, that he knew better. I'll give you one example. There's a documentary made about him, and one of his assistants probably 65 years old on the documentary. So this happened 40 years ago or something like that to her. And she was tearing up when she described how they had to share a hotel room or something because of funds or something. And he somehow got her into bed and said, it'll only be 5 minutes of your time, 5 minutes of your time, basically to stay by my side and have your career made just by having sex with me one time. That tells me that he knew she didn't want it. He was bargaining with her, saying, look, it's only 5 minutes. Let me get what I want. Then you're going to have the career you want. So I believe Harvey Weinstein was very clear that he was not attractive to women. He also could not get an erection. A lot of people don't know this unless they've read my book on this, my second book called The Godfathers of Sex Abuse, book two. He had a real problem. So did Jeffrey Epstein, which I find really interesting because these men were serial rapists, and yet they had a very fundamental problem with sexuality, which may be exactly why they were serial rapists, maybe trying to prove to themselves that they, you know, were sexually attractive or didn't have a sex problem. But anyway, what the court said was that by letting in the testimony of three witnesses who were not victims in this trial in New York, it unduly prejudiced Harvey Weinstein because the jury may have been using that evidence to assume he had a propensity to commit these acts. The irony, of course, is that he does have a propensity to commit these acts, but that's not allowed in. It can't, the evidence can't come in to show character or propensity. It can only come in to show lack of mistake, knowledge, intent. Well, that's why it's such a big issue, because the trial judge said it was relevant to show intent, lack of mistake, knowledge that these women did not want to have sex with him. Because remember, the big issue was consent, with Harvey Weinstein saying these women consented and the women saying, no, we didn't. So the Court of Appeals said that there was something else the court did to the trial court in the New York trial. The trial court said that it would allow the prosecution to question Harvey Weinstein about those prior acts. And Harvey Weinstein made the decision not to take the stand because he didn't want to be subjected to that kind of cross-examination. So he lost his ability to take the stand, which he had planned to do because of the judge's ruling. And the Court of Appeals said those two things together, letting in the prior acts testimony by the three women, plus allowing the prosecutor to cross-examine Harvey Weinstein, those things together really changed the trial. So I'm really neutral here. I can see both sides of it. I believe he will be probably convicted again because I think the evidence is strong enough. But I see why the trial judge did what they did. I also see why the Court of Appeals did what they did. It's just a really, it's a controversial area of law. Normally, however, the Court of Appeals will uphold the trial court's discretion. These are highly discretionary matters in the criminal context when it comes to prior acts. They are not discretionary in Title VII cases, but that's what I'm dealing with right now. Again, because the difference is noticed. And Clarence Thomas, 20 years ago, in 2004, clarified why the various circuits requiring intent for Title VII cases are wrong. He, in his opinion in the case called Pennsylvania State Police versus Suitors, 2004, he explained there's no intent requirement for Title VII liability because it's not based on intent. It's based on negligence. It's an environmental claim in Title VII based on negligence, and therefore there is no intent requirement. There's a requirement of fault, of negligence, of knowing or should have known that this is going on and failing to take reasonable action. But it's very different in the criminal context. Again, Harvey Weinstein is a criminal defendant. So this is an issue of intent. You have to intend almost all crimes other than a few crimes of, you know, producing dangerous products, things like that. There are some times when you don't have to actually show intent. But in almost all criminal trials, there's some element of intent. And so that's why the prior acts jurisprudence is a little different in the criminal context and the Title VII in other contexts.
Dina, not to raise a delicate point, but if he suffers from erectile dysfunction, how does he commit rape? I mean, it would seem to be problematic. Would you care to elaborate?
It's all in here. He hired one of the assistants to go out and obtain pharmaceutical drugs, something that was an injection. And he would tell her, if you tell anyone, your career's over or whatever. But he said it to a lot of people, actually. But what she would have to do is go to the pharmacy, pick up this drug, bring it in a plain brown paper sack and give it to him. So he would actually have to take a drug, inject a drug to be able to get an erection, to be able to rape women. But keep in mind, a lot of his rapes were not traditional rape. Rose McGowan was the first, and Rose McGowan should be credited for what happened to Harvey Weinstein. It's always hard to be the first one on the line, and she was, you know, in the front line at the very beginning. Rose McGowan's a very strong woman, And she described a rape that had nothing to do with his genitalia. He pushed her down and performed oral sex on her without her consent. And he was so big and she was so tiny that she couldn't really get up. And this is something that Uma Thurman also described about Harvey Weinstein. He was on top of her at one point and she was squirming, you know, like crazy, just like a wild animal trying to get out. And she did get out from under him. And he later said that she had a lizard brain or something like that. And Uma Thurman told Quentin Tarantino about it. And Quentin Tarantino's films were all funded by Harvey Weinstein. And to make a long story short, during the production of Kill Bill, Quentin Tarantino was very abusive to her after she had told Quentin Tarantino about Harvey Weinstein. He made her into a car.
Tarantino was abusive toward Uma Thurman when she had exposed what Harvey was doing. You know, I love that film. I mean, I've watched it numerous times. It's a fascinating piece of work. And Quentin Tarantino's work generally is really quite fascinating. He's done so much really good stuff, including, you know, with Travolta and a host of others. I mean, Pulp Fiction is an illustration. Go for it.
I'm a big fan of Quentin Tarantino as a director. I think he's brilliant, funny, creative. There was one film he did where he had a scene where someone flipped their cigarette, landed right in someone else's dessert or something. He's funny. But here's what I'm getting at. The women who come out are punished for it. Uma Thurman is a brilliant actress, very smart person, and she was injured permanently, I believe, because of the way she came out about Harvey Weinstein and how Quentin Tarantino then, after that, made her do a scene that the whole crew was saying, no, 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 she'll get hurt. And she did get very badly injured. Let me talk about quickly also Dr. Barbara Zib. I think it's really important because these examples keep coming up with the women who come forward getting very badly injured or killed. And then I want to bring up a third one as well. But the second one was Barbara Zib. What happened in Bill Cosby's first trial was there was a hung jury. So the prosecutors polled the jury after the trial, said, why? Why did you let him go? And they said, because we didn't understand why the women waited 20 years to come forward. It doesn't make sense to us. So the next trial with Bill Cosby involved an expert named Dr. Barbara Zib. And Dr. Barbara Zib's out of Philadelphia, and she's an expert in sexual trauma. And she described why women don't come forward right away. And the second trial ended up with a conviction against Cosby because of her testimony. She made the jury understand. Now, she was also hired for the Harvey Weinstein trial. And the day of the verdict, I think it was the very same day, within hours, might have been the next day, she was walking in Philadelphia and she was run over by a car. And I heard that and I said, you know, this was retaliation because she's now put away two big figures, Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein. Yes. And it turned out it was a young woman who had a rental car, but that didn't change my analysis. That's exactly how you would do it. You get some, you know, and she may not even, you know exactly, you know, what the situation was. Maybe she's someone known to be on drugs. I don't know why it happened, how it happened, I mean, but I think I know why it happened. And I think Barbara Zib was punished. Another example is the recent Alec Baldwin incident. What was it, a year ago or so?
On Rust, on the stage of Rust, where he shot the
armorer. Yes, he shot one of the crew members. What a lot of people don't know is this beautiful, truly beautiful woman was leading the charge of the employees against Alec Baldwin and others because they weren't paying their per diem food bills or something like that.
Really, Dina, this is huge.
Oh, yes.
The public doesn't know. Alec Baldwin. Go ahead.
She was the Norma Ray of that crew in that film. And, you know, shockingly, amazingly, and coincidentally, Alec Baldwin picks up a loaded gun and shoots her in the chest and she dies. So again, I know he would say it's an accident and I don't know his mind, so I can't say for sure, but it sure seems interesting to me that the women who complained, this is a serious complaint against Alec Baldwin and others. Remember, he was one of the producers. So you're seeing it over and over again. And you know, I was poisoned at the Sunset Restaurant in Malibu. And it was, I believe it was at the hands of a man who worked behind the bar, the bar manager, and I have my reasons for believing that. And among those reasons, we were there about a month prior, and we were talking about my first book, Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Gates and the relationship, and he yelled at me in my face. And I wasn't talking to him. I was talking to my friend who's a cancer researcher. We were talking about the book and the content, and he got in my face and kind of yelled at me and said, you shouldn't talk about, do you have any idea how rich Bill Gates is? And I said, yes, I know how rich he is in mortal terms. In mortal terms, if that's what you value, it's not what I value. My opinion is all real power comes from God. Any other power is going to disintegrate, as the Bible says. That's my opinion. So I don't care about the billionaires. I don't think they have anything over anyone else, especially if those other people are closer to God. That's where I think real power drives from. Anyway, so this guy got in my face, yelled at me, and then he got really close to my face and said, you don't know what men want. And my friend and I looked at each other and said, what, 12-year-olds? So it was 1 month exactly after that that I was poisoned at the Sunset Restaurant in Malibu. And I'm very lucky I hadn't eaten anything for 24 hours. I threw up all over the beach parking lot and somehow made it home, lost some of my memory that night. But I was really sick for several days.
Do you think it was your drink that was poisoned?
Yes, I had just one drink, and it was a little cloudy. And I took one sip when it came to the table. It was a grapefruit and vodka, which can look cloudy if it's canned grapefruit. And I felt kind of weird after the first sip. I remember thinking it's kind of strong, but I was so out of it that later I noticed it looked really cloudy, and I drank it anyway. I saw it. It's like I saw it, and it didn't register to me. I thought back about it, I thought, well, something was in there. And then the Quest lab in the Westlake area lost the results.
And really?
So I came back to Houston and paid a lot of money for a hair sample test, but they couldn't find anything. And so this is what's going on. Whoever did that to me, and I don't know what their intent was, but I was really, really sick. And I wonder what would have happened if I had had food in my stomach that would have brought the poisons into my body further. Because I think it's because I hadn't eaten. But my point is just that the women who come forward, the women who are strong, and especially in general, women who are pretty, women, they call it the femme fatale women. Those women are attacked all the time. And not just sexual assault. The career sabotage is out of control. These women are being pushed out of their jobs, oftentimes at the hands of other women in the workplace. And so in my third part of the book, The Godfathers of Sex Abuse book two, the third part's called The Penumbras of Me Too. And I talk about what the penumbras are. It's not, sexual assault is the tip of the iceberg. Harvey Weinstein and what he did is a teeny tiny part of how women are put down in society. And many, many more women are slandered in the workplace, slandered to, you know, block their career progress. Their privacy's invaded. Their purses are stolen so someone can look inside and see what they have inside. That happened to me at a place in Houston. I set down my purse and I turned my back to get a beer, and I came back and it was missing. And I thought, well, maybe I left it in the car. I can't remember the name. Something ate. It's in the Heights. I can't remember the name. These people took the management took my handbag, went through it with a fine-tooth comb, put it in a hefty bag, and then returned it to me. And I was so upset with my friend who brought me there. I'm like, why would you bring me this place? I wish I could remember the name. Something ate. And it was, I think, you know, I don't know why that happened to me, but it could have been they were hoping to find something that I shouldn't have had with me, or hoping to find a medication, which, of course, I had absolutely nothing in my purse except money and credit cards and lipstick. So there was nothing to be had. But my point is that these types of invasive actions against women who've spoken out are ubiquitous, and they're dangerous. And so we have to really watch our backs. So that kind of converges with the political message. What does this mean about the Me Too movement? What does it mean that the Court of Appeals reversed the conviction because it wasn't a fair trial, according to them, and he's going to get a new trial? I can't say for sure. I do understand why the Court of Appeals felt that the trial judge's rulings might have been prejudicial toward Harvey Weinstein. I think if I had been the trial judge, I would have been a little bit more conservative with the evidence, only to avoid this exact situation. Sometimes you don't bring in evidence that you could because you don't want to create a basis for appeal. If you think it's a close call with the evidence and you don't think you need the evidence, you shouldn't bring it in, even if it's probative, because you don't want to create an issue on appeal like this. But the trial judge is probably very savvy with the Me Too psychological and sociological knowledge. We know this goes on. We know it's a pattern. We know they know what they're doing. We know they know women don't want them. They wouldn't be lying, cheating, stealing, giving drugs, telling them it's a contact, you know, a cold medication like Bill Cosby did, when in truth it was a quaalude. You don't do those things if you get sex consensually. You do those things when you know they're going to say no, unless they're compromised. So these men know. So I think the trial judge was just trying to make sure the jury had plenty of evidence that Harvey Weinstein wasn't confused about whether these women gave consent.
Fascinating, you know, and I've always been perplexed by the Bill Cosby case. I mean, it was so shocking. We grew up thinking Bill Cosby was kind of a model male black role figure, even a father's knows best type, and then it turns out he has a preference for having sex with unconscious women. Frankly, that has perplexed me, Deanna. I mean, you know, it's akin to necrophilia, it would seem to me. I, as an adult male, would only want to have sex with adult females who wanted to have sex with me, but he seemingly has completely opposite tendencies. I presume he must have always used a condom in order to prevent there being DNA evidence. But please, could you elaborate on the psychodynamics of Bill Cosby in it, getting women drugged and then having sex with them when they're unconscious? To me, it's appalling.
Sure. Well, I think that Bill Cosby was the only one of the three who didn't have erectile dysfunction. I think Bill Cosby made us have a very, very high sex drive. It is so high that he can't separate what he wants and what he thinks he deserves. Remember, a lot of rich men think they're entitled to have sex with whoever they want to have sex with. Jeffrey Epstein said that. I'm like a king. You know, he wanted to start a whole line of human beings using his own DNA at Zorro, his ranch. And he wanted to impregnate 20 women at the same time. So we have 20, you know, a superior race, he called it. A superior race, the psychologically this deranged freak, right? It's amazing. These men are so, you know, so deranged. They actually believe that they're superior to others when they are truly inferior in terms of morality, consciousness, decency. So with Cosby, I think he was just doing whatever he felt like doing and just so he could get away with it. And some of the, at least one black woman, this is also my second book, said the reason she didn't come forward is because she didn't want to bring down a black icon. You know, the black community is very conscious that there's not enough black superstars who are on the news. There's a long history of the news sort of carrying a lot of stories with black criminals and not carrying a lot of stories with black surgeons or black lawyers who are very successful. I don't know what that's all about, but it could be implicit bias. It could be intentional bias. So the black community often has a lot of pressure, you know, on the individuals not to come forward with misconduct by black leaders because they don't want to bring down one of the few blacks who made it at that level and are considered an icon. I never liked Bill Cosby. I can't explain why. I didn't think he was funny. And I did not like his behavior on the Jell-O commercials. It grossed me out. He was like slurping. I told my mom, that guy's kind of gross. Our household was not fans of Cosby. We never liked Cosby. So maybe it was just intuition. Something told us. And I don't dislike him. I'm saying I just, there's other people who I really, really like as comedians. And he's just not one of them. Steve Martin. I adored Steve Martin, for example. I don't see Cosby as funny like that. But anyway, you know, Cy Vance came forward in a CNN article that came out just a couple of days ago, and he's apparently turned a corner. He seems to be really supporting the women. Of course, he is a former district attorney. He should be supporting the women, right? But in the past, he didn't support the women so much. He actually helped Weinstein in the past. He also, I believe, helped Jeffrey Epstein. I think he was the one who went in trying to argue for a lesser convicted category for Epstein. The judge, just the female judge, said, I can't believe I'm hearing this from you. I think it was him. It's in my that's in my first book. But anyway, he's now saying, you know, he's really supporting the women. So I hope that's true with Mr. Vance. And back to Cosby, I think it's just, it becomes a game for these men. You know, can they get away with it? Can they get her to do what, you know, they want her to do? With someone like me, for example, someone who's known not to be a philanderer, not to cheat on my husband, a man might try romance, may try saying I love you, may try things like that to try to bring down my resistance, or drugs or something like that. I don't know. But every woman's treated a little differently. And I want to say there were two statements made to me in Malibu about the time my books came out. One was by a woman who I really liked in my gym, and we're in the locker room, and she said, Dina, I grew up with these people. These women will jump in bed to get apart with anybody. And I said, oh, really? She goes, they're awful women. So not all of them, but she had a lot of them. So she goes, they're now complaining, but you know, that was kind of the deal. Another man who I never met, never saw before. I was in the postal annex, you know, in Trancas. And he came up to me and said, I don't know how he knew who I was. And he said to me, those women in Hollywood are not like you. And he just walked off. I'm like, okay. And so I think that why there's such controversy surrounding these cases is that many women in Hollywood, if not most women in Hollywood, and probably to some degree all women in Hollywood who make it, are compromising their bodies, their hearts and their souls to get what they want in terms of fame. So you can understand in a certain way why certain men would say they got what they deserved. I don't agree with that. I don't believe anyone ever deserves to have their sexual prerogative bent. But I also think that when a person is seeking fame at the level
Dina, stand by. We've hit a break. We're going to be back with Dina Pollard-Sachs. You don't want to miss a word of this. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal
than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Dina is so fabulous. I feature her as a speaker at three of my four false flag and conspiracy conferences. You can check them out if you go to jameshfetzer.org and look under events. Dina, I wanted to ask you about a rumor I've heard, which is that regarding Harvey Weinstein, who physically to me is rather repulsive. If I were a woman, I wouldn't be attracted to that guy. That he was treating Gwyneth Paltrow as virtually a sex slave. Do you know the story there?
I don't know the story. I don't know Gwyneth Paltrow at all. Never met her, never saw her in person. One of my family members did meet her at some point at an event and sat next to her and told me she never even would say hello. So I don't know this lady. She's beautiful. She's an excellent actress. I do know a story. Again, it's hearsay for me. I read it in the newspaper. That Brad Pitt had walked up to Harvey Weinstein and said, if you ever do anything like that to Gwyneth Paltrow again, I'll kill you. Or words to that effect. That tells me he did something to her. She did get the starring role in Shakespeare in Love. That was Harvey Weinstein's film. It did, you know, boost her career tremendously. What she might have done to compromise herself to get that role, I don't know. But in my opinion, those who seek fame are already compromised. That's not what you do. When you're with God, and I don't want to get all religion, but the Bible is full of this, full of comments like this. Revelation is full of comments. Fame seekers are lost. They're lost. Wanting other people's esteem is not what you want to be doing. You want to gain the favor of God. You want to serve other people. You don't want to be on stage. So these people are already, and look at the breast implants and all the stuff in Hollywood. All that stuff is so contrary to what is healthy and normal and goes to the higher state of consciousness. So these women are already compromised. Now, Rose McGowan said, you know, her decision to be an actress was purely mercenary. She left, you know, home young. She's very bright, beautiful, talented. I'm sure some women go into acting just because they need money. But I would say most of them, you know, their values are already a little mixed up. I was in one film in Hollywood. I was asked to be in a film. I was asked to be Miss Mexico City in a film. with Ray Sharkey and Zach Galligan and Julie McCullough and some great people. It was fun. It was just a fun thing to do. But I saw how we were all model contestants, right? Round Trip to Heaven is named the movie. And I saw how they treated the women on set. And Julie McCullough in particular is a class act, beautiful, very talented. She had a real hard time with her career because after she started a really good sitcom, it came out that she was in Playboy when she was 18 and it hurt her career. I think it was called Growing Pains, something like that. But anyway, she is truly kind and wonderful. I mean, I remember the director yelling at her at one point and saying, "Who's the director, me or you?" And she just put her head down and, you know, went back to the backstage. I thought, you know, that's not how you treat someone who has an opinion like Julie McCullough. I mean, she's experienced enough and bright enough. But anyway, it's a hierarchy, right? It's a hierarchy in Hollywood, just like it's a hierarchy in the legal academy and a hierarchy in the military and a hierarchy in a lot of businesses. And that's how certain people take advantage of other people. But back to what would you – oh, how do I say? I want to point something out before I forget. So we've got some fake news on our hands here by the Epoch Times, and I read this. Jessamine Dodd wrote on April 25th, I'm going to read this. When I read this, I said, what? It says, Mr. Weinstein's legal team sought a retrial primarily focusing on the criminal sexual act charge as the statute of limitation bars retrial on the rape charge. That is not true. I wrote that. I said, what? And so I sent a text to my friend who's a former prosecutor, Brad Beers, in Houston, Texas. He said, that's not true. I taught limitations for years. As long as the original filing is timely, the limitations issue is over. The statute of limitations in the civil law only is an issue at the outset of the case. You either miss it or you don't. After that, no matter how many appeals, up and down the courts of appeals, doesn't matter. So I don't know who told her this or what this is supposed to mean, but apparently it sounds like someone has made a decision or is arguing they can't retry the rape charge because of limitations, and that is not true. So why she would put this in the article, I don't know. I don't know this reporter, never heard of her. It's Epoch Times. CNN certainly didn't say that. CNN said nothing like that in its story. So that's not true. If they choose not to retry the rape charge, I will have big questions as to why. Because the fact that it was misreported tells me someone either is being sloppy or is trying to create a false impression of what the facts are.
That's troubling to me because I found that a highly reliable venue in general. So that story having that false claim is very interesting and odd to me.
Maybe she's trying to say in an inarticulate manner that the legal team is claiming the statute of limitations bars retrial. That's not the way it's written. The way it's written, she seems to be saying, she says, you know, the legal team started retrial, da, da, as the statute of limitations bars retrial, as if it's a factual conclusion. That's just not true, according to my colleague who was a prosecutor for many years. So,
as an aside, speaking of statute of limitation, let me ask you about the E. Jean Carroll case, which I regard as a fantasy. I mean, this was a woman obsessed with rape. She'd accused many men, even written about, published a book of having raped her. It all appears to be nonsense. She couldn't even remember the year in which she alleged that Donald Trump had assaulted her in a Bergdorf Goodman, I mean, a high-end department store. She couldn't even remember the year. Yet the statute had expired, and yet the New York State legislature passed a special law to allow her to file, clearly politically driven. But how could that be warranted on the one hand, and on the other, how could Trump be tried when he couldn't offer a defense, an alibi, since we don't even have a specification of the date? Who knows where Trump was in Atlantic City playing golf, Mar-a-Lago? I mean, Tina, this is just so offensive, insulting, and wrong.
Hard to find your alibi when you don't know the dates. I agree. Very, very hard to do. Because your phone records and things like that would show where you were and things like that. So I haven't followed the Trump cases very well because I'm busy with other things and it just isn't my concern at this point in my life. I do think he's been treated unfairly in a number of ways, mostly by the media. He may not be a perfect man, but he is not – you know, the Antichrist either. So to treat him the way they have, I think it's really important. I think the problem is he's charismatic. People like him. And so their only defense against the fact that millions and millions of Americans really like him, their only defense is to make him look bad. And so I think that that's actually not working, because Trump supporters tend to be very, very committed to Trump. I think all it's done is actually create more support for Trump, as people are determined to get out and vote for him because of what they've seen him go through. I don't know him. I barely met him one time in Aspen at the Caribou Club. We were at the same table, and you know, he was very, very polite to me and my friends. Seemed very, classy to me. I don't know the man. The locker room talk got him into so much trouble, grabbing them by the word that I think you can say because of the FCC. Probably not how I would want my son to talk. I don't think my son would talk like that, but it's locker room talk. People say things like that all the time, my husband tells me.
Exaggerated macho, boy to boy, man to man, you know, yes.
I mean, men are pigs. A lot of men are pigs, you know, and that's, they like to talk about sex. They like to fart in front of each other. They think it's funny. They have, I've seen men have contests. And there's that Blazing Saddles, that scene where, and these are how men are. They're just different than women. Women are very conscious of their bodily functions and want to, you know, keep it private. But men think it's funny, and that's how they are. And not all of them, but a lot of them. So I don't know what to say about that. I don't think Donald Trump is the ogre that people say he is. I also don't think he's all that innocent. I mean, he's just a kind of a typical good looking guy, you know, very wealthy, running around New York in the bottle and throttle crowd in the early 80s with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, sleeping with a lot of women who were 21, 22, 23 of age. But these guys were in their 40s and 50s. I mean, yeah, anyway, so I don't just say, I think that the desire to bring down Trump is so extreme. I don't understand that kind of hate toward anybody. You know, I don't know what's going to happen this coming election. I think that if the people have their way, I think Trump will be reelected. But I'm not convinced the people will have their way. I'm worried about election fraud, just because countries tend to get compromised that way. It's the easiest way to take over a country, in a sense, because look at the 2020 election. People don't even know what happened. They don't know, you know, all these boxes of ballots were found, and there was people stuffing them all night, and there were these cell phone, that the 2,000 mules followed the cell phones and found the same people, or at least the same cell phone, had been at several different ballot boxes the same day, and they'd also been to the 501c3s in Philadelphia and the other places where they did this. So that's interesting. Like, they were picking up things from the 501c3s and stepping. I mean, it's really scary that we don't monitor our elections better. I have to go and give my ID. They give me a number. I have to go in Texas and give the number to the machine in order to cast my vote, so they know exactly how I'm voting. So I was born here, and I have to go through that kind of rigmarole to vote. Why? How is it possible that we aren't treating everyone that way and accounting for every vote? I don't understand how that happens, but I think it's a real problem. So I can't explain why a court would allow this to go against Donald Trump other than just sheer politics.
Yeah.
Man who doesn't deserve that much hatred.
Having you here, though, as an expert in this area, you mentioned Trump and Jeffrey. Do you have any reason to think Trump ever was on Lolita Express, ever visited Orgy Island or anything of that? I mean, my impression has been no, that he did not, but you would know far better than I.
Well, there's a lot of controversy about what it meant that certain names in Jeffrey Epstein's little black book were circled. And among those circled names were Alan Dershowitz, I believe, and Donald Trump for sure. And some other I think one of the prime ministers was circled there. So the person, I think his name was Rodriguez, the house cleaner, the maintenance man in the Epstein household. He got a hold of that little black book, and he tried to sell it for $50,000 because he said it was his only insurance policy, right? Anyway, he ended up going to prison for that and dying in prison from his attempt to sell that book. But he supposedly, or somebody there, said that being circled in that book meant that you'd been with someone underage. But Alan Dershowitz allegedly was with Victoria Roberts, now Gouffre. Her married name is Gouffre. And I think that technically it was legal. I think that if what she says is true, and I do believe her over him, I think she was 17. And in the state in which they had sex, according to her, as I recall, that was the age. So he might have been 50 and she might have been repulsed by him. And the whole thing is gross. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine dating someone 40 at 60. I was 20 years younger. Ew, my best friend's kid is 40. He's 41, I think. My best friend from high school, that's just gross to me. My son is 27. I can't even imagine being with someone under 40. But, you know, a lot of men feel differently about it. And if that's true, he was with a minor, but it doesn't necessarily mean it was illegal. But Jeffrey Epstein's different. I mean, he was with a lot of very young 12-year-old, 13-year-old girls. Donald Trump, I do not know. I know that a journalist out of Austin was furious with me for not putting in my Jeffrey Epstein book that Donald Trump, you know, was with girls. And there was one girl in particular, I think her name's Maria, who had made a statement, but I never could get the statement. And neither could the ladies who wrote She Said. They investigated all of that. And Gloria Allred's daughter at one point, I can't remember, Bloom, she, you know, called a press conference and was going to have this girl, you know, come to the microphone and talk about what Donald Trump did to her. And in the press conference, you know, was organized, and Bloom came forward and started talking and said that the woman decided not to come because she was threatened. Okay, well, the reporters who wrote She said, you know, we just got the, or one of them said, I got the vibe that this was just a way for Bloom to get a lot of attention and to take over a press conference. So it just didn't seem to pan out. And so because I trust those New York Times reporters as much as my own investigation, I knew they were right there, you know, at the time. I deferred to them on the Trump issue and just didn't want to put that in a book because I think it would be terribly unfair.
Yes. I think you exercise prudent judgment. Yes, you mentioned the fellow tried to.
I got yelled at, though. I gave you that stuff. I'm like, that's all hearsay to me, and the reporters said something else. So anyway, so I don't know. I know that there's a lot of drugs in that crowd, and I know that certain people get drugged up on something or other and may be, I don't know, drawn into a room. I know some people who were raped in Houston and were so drugged up they had just flashes of memory after the fact. And these were a group of lawyers. It's unbelievable what I know about a group of lawyers in Houston who did this and do it routinely, apparently, at conferences, hotels, and things like that. But they just had snippets of memories, and then they had some physical evidence as well. But it's and these were the victims who didn't have any memory. So imagine if you were with a bunch of these highfalutin drug, you know, high-level drugs, what they do that maybe complete wipe out inhibition and also wipe out memory. Some of these men who are very powerful may have been compromised without really intending to do what they did, and without any memory of it as well. And people do this. One of my friends in Houston told me many years ago, her dad was into politics, pretty high up in politics, and she said, Dina, it's all about getting dirt on everyone else because then you can make them do what you want them to do to not show those photographs or whatever it is. So some of these men may have, as much as they may have victimized some women, they could also have been victims of some kind of scheme to drug them up and have them be with underage girls to get photos to have leverage. Jeffrey Epstein took photos of everyone. He had cameras in his bathroom where people think they have, you know, privacy. He had photos in the rooms in the island. He had cameras in the house in Manhattan. This guy was always looking for dirt on men, rich men, so he could make them do what he wanted. So that is the political game, according to my friend, who's more sophisticated than I am. My family's just a regular family, you know, regular, normal family. So I didn't know any of this kind of thing about politics or anything like that. I've never been involved in politics. So I don't know what Trump or any of the other guys may or may not have done. But even if I knew for a fact that they had photos of them with girls, I would ask, what were they drinking? What were they ingesting that night? Why would they do that? Because Donald Trump seems to really love his children. And when you have little girls that you love, I think that makes it unlikely that you would compromise someone else's little girl. But I don't, again, I don't know this man very well. I just know that there's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes in Hollywood and politics, any kind of, any form in which there's very wealthy people who are often, you know, not very good people. And I was just reading a Matthew the other day where Jesus told this group why it's so hard to get into heaven if you're rich. And he was explaining, you know, sort of the dynamics of what people think like or what they do when they have that kind of power over others. So it really is a true thing. You know, people who are very, very wealthy tend to be compromised morally or to get compromised morally as they hang around other really rich people who are already compromised morally. Being in that environment, being around that energy, it matters. You want to keep your soul clean, stay away from people like that. And they do drugs. Like I said, they do drugs. They push women and men, young men on these people. I don't know what he did, but I'm not sure we'll ever really know. But I think that as the election draws closer, that some information is going to come out about some of the candidates that has not yet come out.
Dina, I'm just going to speculate here, but I think if the names were circled, that would mean got them, you know, that they had something on them. That would be my guess. Now, you mentioned you mentioned a fellow wanted to sell his little black book, went to prison, and died. Well, Jeffrey Epstein went to prison, but I do not believe he died. Do you believe, as I believe, that he was, in fact, escorted out when the cameras went shut down? The whole thing appeared to be phony as could be. Any thoughts?
I do believe he's alive today. In my book, the last chapter is called, Is Jeffrey Epstein Really Dead? And that comes right after the Bill Gates chapter. And I talk about the evidence, and the evidence is unbelievably inconclusive, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
There's no hard evidence that he is dead.
Right.
Okay. The photographs taken of him looked a little bit like him, but he was a lean, wiry man. And the photographs taken of whoever was on that gurney, he didn't even look dead to me. He didn't even look that much like him.
Yeah.
Just bigger. And more importantly, who took off the bag for the photo opportunity? You never stop bagging the patient. One of my, Shanasa is a nurse, and she said, Dina, you never, ever, ever stop bagging the patient. You get him in the hospital, and there's a point at which it's turned over to the staff in the hospital, but until then, you never, ever take the bag off a patient, whether he's dead or alive, because you don't know for sure. You keep the oxygen flowing until they're turned over to the hospital staff. So that was weird. And where are all the photographers? Why did it take an hour to get from the the Metropolitan Correctional Center to the hospital? It's a 5-minute drive, even in traffic. Where'd that hour go? And why were all the cameras down right at the perfect time? And where were the regular guards? Why were they replaced by temporary staff guards? You know, but then let's go to his personality. He was into Bill Gates because, well, mostly because he always wanted to acquire rich men, as he would say. But Bill Gates and he had a sort of bond through the idea of transhumanism, the idea of replacing body parts and basically never dying. So if Jeffrey Epstein believes that, if he believed you could live forever, which he apparently did, he was kooky as all get out, why would he kill himself? So I'm convinced he didn't kill himself. He also didn't have the materials to kill himself. And by the way, after my book came out, CNN, 60 Minutes came out with a totally bogus story. I was standing in my living room, absolutely appalled that 60 Minutes reported that he had some kind of a machine in his, the breathing machine for people who have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
That he must have used the cord. Oh, no, there was no such machine in his room, because even the experts testified or talked to reporters saying there was nothing to kill himself with. He had these thin sheets, and he would have had to make a ligature out of this very thin material and wrap it up. And if that was Dr. Biden, I think his name was. He used to be the
Michael Biden. Michael Biden.
The DNA would have been all over that ligature if a ligature was made. He would have had to hang himself on the back of it and lean forward. Come on, you know. And he'd also been apparently attacked earlier a couple weeks prior to that, and that was swept under the table. So what I believe is either he was murdered in prison, or much much more likely he was
escorted out.
I could almost hear the conversation. You know, you have to die, young man.
Yeah.
Because the public will never accept it if you let out. Okay, well, we'll have to die. I'll have to die. I could almost hear it. You know, I did have a dream as well where someone approached me and said, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's not dead, right?
Right.
And I said, I know. That was just a dream.
Yeah.
But our dreams reflect our subconscious a lot. So somewhere in my subconscious mind, I didn't believe he was dead. So, I don't believe it.
A photo of a body on a gurney was actually taken in a firehouse. I mean, it's not even in a hospital. I mean, it's completely photoshopped, one that I have seen. You got dirty walls and you got paraphernalia there that are appropriate to a firehouse, not to a hospital. So, I think, I think he's.
All I know is my stepson Adam took one look and said, that's not him. I said, that was my impression. He said, it's not him. Adam's very, very
love it. Anyway. Dina, we're going to come up on a break. I want to open the lines to callers, and I have a fellow who often joins me as co-host, Keith Rogers. Can you stick around for some questions and discussion?
Oh, sure.
Oh,
sure.
Super. I am ecstatic. This is wonderful, Dina. Wonderful, wonderful. And I'd love it if you said more about Bill Gates, because I find him one of the most peculiar figures on the face of Earth. And if there ever were, it appears to me, if there ever were a genocidal maniac, his name is Bill Gates.
Yeah, not to justify, but I think he had some troubles growing up, too. Growing up as the son of a very wealthy lawyer. You know, living in the shadow, sort of as he did until he became super famous himself, and having some issues with attitude and getting in trouble with speeding and speeding without his license. A lot of us were belligerent as teens, but Bill Gates certainly was. He has some examples of that. So I will, I don't know him. I've never met him, but I will be happy to tell you what I do know about him.
Yes, yes, yes. And we're about to hit a hard break. The call-in number, by the way, to speak to Dina or me is 608-957-8727. I repeat, 608-957-8727, right after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Thank you.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we do have a first caller, Dina, from the 816 area code. Caller, join the conversation, please.
I wanted to talk about Bill Cosby a little bit, because if you ever listen to any of his speeches that he was giving, he was one that said, you know, young black people need to be more responsible. We need, as the black community, to grow up and you know, just take more responsibility for our actions. He was really against crime. And so to me, and I saw this somewhere on the internet, they were saying that the cases against him were done by the deep state, by the dark. That basically all those women were paid off. They got their big payback or payoffs, kind of like, you know, the one with Trump, to try and frame him to make him look bad, because if there's one thing they really dislike is anyone who is famous in any way having viewpoints that differ from their viewpoints. So your thoughts on that?
This is Brian in Kansas City, a regular caller to the show, Dina, but a great question.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I talk about this a lot in my second book, in the section of Bill Cosby. And what happened was Bill Cosby was promised that a deposition would be kept under wraps, would be sealed. That was in the Andrea Constant civil trial. And because he was assured that it would never come out, he admitted to giving women quaaludes and all that. So what happened was later on, someone moved to unseal that deposition transcript. And what the judge did was honed in on Bill Cosby's black moralist persona. He said, you know, if he hadn't been running around, you know, with this black moralist superiority, you black men get a job and take care of your babies and this kind of thing. If he hadn't been presenting himself exactly kind of the opposite as what he was, the judge said it may not be so relevant. But because of that, the judge ordered that transcript to be revealed. And that's where Cosby admitted to using quaaludes, just like he said, like some men might use a cocktail, I use quaaludes. And he got them from this doctor in Beverly Hills who ultimately, I think, had his board license taken away. But this guy was, you know, handing out quaaludes to Bill Cosby and others. And Cosby had a whole stock of them. So when this guy was no longer practicing medicine, he had a lot of quaaludes, you know, stocked up. So he did use them. Yes, that is really, I don't believe for 1 second that Bill Cosby was set up. I've heard the women interviewed, and it was what was especially compelling for me is the black young woman he raped who said the reason I didn't come forward was because in the black community there's so few black men who are icons and we don't want to knock them down. And I've heard the same kind of thing at TSU, the Thurgood Marshall School of Law, as to why the students will not tell the truth about what administrators and professors are doing to them because they don't want to bring down a black male who's managed to become a quote-unquote law professor. Now, if you look at the credentials of these people, you'll say they're not law professors at all. Law professors publish. Law professors can at least articulate the law and should be expanding upon it, but they don't do that at all. So I say law professor in a very loose term in the situation, but they still do have the title and they have the status and they're making a nice big six-figure salary. So the black women and black men, many black men, have claimed that the black administrators at TSU have sexually assaulted them. I did get one letter from one describing the sexual assault by the provost, grabbing him, saying, I need you in the law school, basically and grabbing him in the private parts. So they mostly don't want to come forward because the black community is cohesive and to some degree and defensive because they have been unfairly treated throughout history. So they don't want to add to taking down one of their own, you see? So it's complicated, but Bill Cosby raped so many people, drugged so many people. There were so many accounts. And the way the women described, you know, what they woke up to, for example, everything from bruising to, it just resonated. It sounded like truth to me. So I'm very careful to listen to how people describe their rapes to see if, you know, it makes sense. And Bill Cosby wasn't set up. He was a cocky, I'm sorry, he's out now. He is extraordinarily, full of himself in terms of believing that he can do whatever he wants because he was worth $400 million at the high point. Weinstein was also worth about $400 million at the high point. How interesting. And you know what? Epstein was about the same at the high point. Although people say he was a billionaire, Epstein, there's no evidence he was ever a billionaire. His friends were billionaires, but not him. And so, you know, it's an attitude among the entitled, forgetting, you know, that there is a real God. They aren't it. And, that is the kind of behavior that will take you very, very far from the real source. That's just, you can't oppress other people. You can't use your power against other people like that.
They appear to me to be classic narcissists, you know, which is another reason Jeffrey Epstein would not have taken his own life. He thought too much of himself to do it.
Well, that's what's interesting about narcissism, because I looked this up to try to understand exactly how it played into these men's lives. And a narcissist fundamentally lacks self-esteem. Most importantly, a narcissist is someone who did not have strong parenting normally. A narcissist is ignored as a child. They don't develop a strong sense of self. They don't develop a sense that they are whole, complete, and perfect in and of themselves, that they can be imperfect. And that's okay, because they're still perfect in terms of being a human being worthy of value, worthy of love. So these narcissistic people actually have low self-esteem and they don't know who they are. They're seeking an identity. So they go out and they brag about themselves and brag about sports accolades they didn't achieve and say they went to Harvard Law School and they really went to, you know, University of Houston or whatever they do. And these people lie nonstop. The cornerstone of narcissism is lying. Narcissists always, always lie because they want more self-esteem than they feel they can get based on their true accolades, what they've truly accomplished. So, are these people narcissists? Yes. How do we know that? Because they lie. They lie to people. They lie to they lie to get sex. They also need to bed a lot of women. Who needs to bed a lot of women? Someone who is fundamentally insecure. Someone who fundamentally does not respect their own body, not to mention the women's bodies. And these are people who are deeply, deeply dysfunctional and troubled and often very deranged, backgrounds, histories of drug abuse. Cognitively, they are compromised. They're truly deranged. They do not see the world for what it is. But most importantly, they don't feel good about themselves. And so even though these men are awful people in some ways, I think that they also deserve some sympathy. And I truly believe they could be redeemed. I believe anyone can be redeemed, no matter what they did, because if they truly see the errors of their ways, then I think that they can be. But I think we have to look at these people like in Hollywood and kind of feel sorry for all of them. I mean, they're all a bunch of ding-dongs running around, bumping into walls. They have no idea which way is up. They have no idea which way is the path toward real happiness, real peace. And that is, you know, through living your life a certain way. And a really good place to start is the Ten Commandments. Really good place to start in terms of how do you obtain good relationships that last? How do you obtain true friendships? How do you obtain peace within your own mind? You know, try being a good person.
That's so wonderful.
They're looking for money. They're looking for things that are temporal. They're looking for money. They're looking for looks. They're looking for, you know, plastic surgery and the effects of that. Those are things that's all going to fade away. All those things. And they don't look for what's real and what creates real happiness, higher consciousness, love of oneself, love of one's body, treating the body like a temple, you know, meditation, prayer. That's my opinion. I mean, this is obviously, you know, what I've given so much thought to what is wrong with our society, what is wrong with everybody, and what on earth is wrong with Hollywood, you know? And so I'm giving many, many years of thought to this and researching it. And this is what I've concluded. These people need help too. Even the perpetrators of these sexual crimes, they need help too.
Brian, further questions?
Well, no. When she talks about everyone can be redeemed, I just know that there are some that when we basically have judgment day, when we go to this age of Aquarius, a lot of those people are going to be transmutated and there will be no trace of them left. So there are just some that are beyond redemption.
Revelation says, absolutely. And, you know, just because I say they all could be redeemed, I'm not saying they will be. Revelation says they will not be. The vast majority will not be. When Mother Mary visited those children in Yugoslavia on the hillside, if you believe this, and I believe those six children did see Mother Mary. I believe they did talk to her. And partly I believe that because Pope John Paul II was praying for God to send back Mother Mary. You know, Fatima and all that was so long. He wanted another newer, more recent appearance. And she told those, and she cried in front of those kids. And she said, the vast majority of people will not be redeemed. And you only can be redeemed one way, and that is through God. And that is, and he can see through your heart. You don't get to fake it, unlike Hollywood and politics and whatever. There's no faking it with God. He can read your heart. The one thing he can do for sure that Satan, if you believe in Satan, cannot do. God is the only one who can read your heart. But if you truly are redeemed, you're truly redeemed. Otherwise, you're not. And what Mother Mary said is that she said in the end of days, you know, people will be told you've got to repent, and they will continue to curse God. I'm like, I would think if you're in Armageddon and things are flying around, you would go for anything that would possibly bring you peace. But she says they won't. She says the vast majority of people will never be redeemed and will not be saved, and they'll basically be extinguished. That's what Revelation says. They'll be kind of extinguished, like you said. So I've been so fascinated by my Bible studies over the past 2 years. I'm actually looking into going to seminary school because the Bible is absolutely fascinating and answers everything. And where people go wrong is they're misinterpreting things, I think. And also a lot of chapters were left out. Every part of the Bible on reincarnation was kept out. I think it was Constantine who made those decisions. So we're not even getting the full, you know, context of what all was said. So I think that with that in mind, I sure would like to spend the rest of my life studying this amazing book and what it has to say to us all, because I think it is extraordinarily beneficial to us if we listen to it.
And of course, there are parts of the Bible that Netanyahu is citing in defense of genocide, because in the Old Testament, there's a lot of genocide being promoted by their God. So there's
I didn't know. I just started studying a couple of years ago. It's not full time. I've read a lot of the prophet statements in the Old Testament. A lot of the New Testament I've read as well. And I've studied guides and everything else. So I don't know about that. But I will say that I believe, you know, Jesus Christ came for a reason. And the reason was to correct a perception of God that wasn't accurate. I think that Jesus came to show that we don't have a God of vengeance, a God that will kill him. I don't think so. I think God is a God of love and light. That's my opinion. But anyway, the Old Testament does have things that I think probably aren't quite right. And that's probably why Jesus Christ was sent to correct that perception of who God is.
Brian.
Well, The problem I have with the Bible is, you know, I do meditation twice a day, Kundalini yoga, chakra dhyana, at least 7.5 hours apart. And then what I do is there's three chakras above your seven chakras. And when you get to your third eye, you focus on them. And then you can make a high-pitched noise and bring down information. And so you're getting beyond the veil. When I was doing this, Siddharth got so upset, they put me in the hospital with a $17,000 doctor bill. And basically, the Bible was a wonderful book, but the dark get into it. They corrupt everything. They showed me that the protocols of the elders of Zion were in the book of Thomas, okay? And I actually found something on the internet about that the other day. So what I would get was true. Also, the Greek gods and goddesses were real. They actually broke themselves down 12,000 times into 12,000 people because they were too powerful to be in these bodies. And then they've incarnated. So if you take 12 times 12,000, you get 144,000. The apostles of Christ were those Greek gods and goddesses, and Christ was actually Prometheus. They showed me his lifetimes because he's he's incarnated more than just being Christ. He was Muhammad. He was Queen Elizabeth I. He was Joseph Smith. There's one in the 30s I won't talk about because it's too much for people to grasp. He was George Washington. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I downloaded. And because of it, huh? What now?
You mean like a Jack the Ripper or something in the 30s? Is that in the 30s? I don't know what
day. No, I think he's talking about a figure who is often attributed with having initiated World War II, if I read you right, Brian.
Yes. You know what I in fact, you can find a Jewish rabbi named Olan Alave online that even says Hitler was a lifetime of Christ. So what they do, they always infiltrate from within, so they knew who he was, and so they immediately get their people in there and do all this nasty stuff and put the blame on him. He just becomes their patsy, and that's exactly what they were doing.
That's all new to me. And by the way, Jack Ripper's a late 19th century, 1891, way before your time. I just didn't know who you're talking about, and you said you didn't want to mention.
No. He was talking about the 1930s, Dean, and Adolf Hitler.
There are those who would say that, you know, Jack Ripper was trying to send a message that prostitution is, you know,
Was the physician to the court? I mean, there's something there. We had an heir to the crown. It was
some work related butchering that went on because like the whole what's his name, Dexter. You know, they usually have some kind of a job that relates to their need to whatever cut demons. I don't know. I just know that there's a story about who that person might have been. But anyway, I don't know about all that, and I'm very open.
Oh, yeah. And there's so many interpretations and
all this, but this is one of the reasons why I want to gain more education into the Bible, you know, what books made the Bible, what books were cut, left on the cutting room floor. I think that's really important. The fact that all the parts on reincarnation were cut out, I find that fascinating. Why? You know, not every single thing the prophet said was right. I mean, not every single story is exactly accurate. We're talking about human beings writing what they saw or thought they saw.
Dina, let me ask, has your research on Epstein, for example, spilled over into Pizzagate? Have you got connection to Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and the like? It's pretty sordid stuff. Comet Pizza, any of that fallen into your lap?
A couple of things we know. Bill Clinton was very, very close to Ghislaine Maxwell, who was Jeffrey Epstein's sidekick.
Yes.
They were cozy buddies, you know. And so I imagine the Clintons were, you know, it turns out a lot of people were involved with Jeffrey Epstein. Not just not just Trump, you know, among our candidates. There were others as well who wrote in his plane. And you asked me about Bill Gates. Yes, he wrote in his plane.
Well, you know, the portrait of Bill Clinton in blue dress with red pumps that hung in Epstein's house. I mean, I've seen a photograph of it.
And so these people, this is my understanding, especially talking to that one friend of mine from Houston whose dad was involved with the Bushes and who knows a lot about politics. She said they're all involved at the top. Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. They are all, they think they are smarter than other people. They have more, you know, more mortal power, I'll call it, more money. And they think that because they have more money, that somehow they're above other people. But most of the time, they're not even that smart. Most of the time, take a look at their SAT scores. And they, of course, they won't reveal them. Okay, I think every single federal judge, every single person who wants to run for Congress, they should all reveal their SAT scores and their LSAT scores. That's my opinion. There's actually a law in Texas where if you're a school teacher, you must reveal your SAT scores and your standardized test scores all around to the public, because the Texas legislature decided if you're teaching our children, we need to know if you're qualified, but try getting them. So the law's on the books, but you can't get them. These people are generally, they're often not that bright, but even when they are very bright, they're often not that moral. And their attitudes of superiority is just, it's mind-boggling to me. It's like they don't understand there's going to be some kind of reckoning one day. You call it a judgment day. I agree there's going to be something like that. Thank God there will be something like that, because that's where the real power, that's when the real power is going to matter, the power of how you live your life, how, what you do and what you don't do.
Do you?
And these people, they all connected to Epstein. There's so many people around the world connected to Epstein.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, sure.
I'm sorry. I wanted to point out that Ghislaine Maxwell and Bill Gates' mother was a Maxwell. So Bill Gates and Ghislaine Maxwell are cousins. Okay. I don't know if people are aware of that. So,
well, Bill and, sorted sexual history any way you cut it, and I wouldn't be surprised at all that it was far more than we know today, that there's a whole lot more going on there.
Bill Gates has real issues with credibility. For example, he got into it with Judge Jackson back in the U.S. versus Microsoft case, and Judge Jackson was so appalled by what he saw Bill Gates and his executives doing, just blatantly lying under oath, and then laughing about it. For example, at one point, this is my first book, my Jeffrey Epstein book. At one point during a deposition, the government came out and asked Bill Gates, you know, whether he had intentionally destroyed Netscape. Remember, Netscape Navigator was the number one browser. It was the leading browser. And what Microsoft did is they coupled the operating system that everyone wanted with a browser that came with the computer. So they were basically coupling products and making everyone buy the browser with the operating system that everyone wanted, right? I think it was Windows, right? It's called Windows, which replaced DOS. Well, that's the antitrust case. Well, but it's more than that, because they also made sure that the operating system wouldn't work well with Netscape. And they destroyed Netscape Navigator. So when Bill Gates was asked in deposition, did you seek out to destroy Netscape Navigator? He said, I never heard of them, or said something like that. They pull out a memo. And they say, in this memo, you say, you know, basically, we must destroy Netscape Navigator. And Bill Gates just kind of laughs. And so he and the judge, Judge Jackson, got into it at the trial court level. And Judge Jackson ordered Microsoft to be split. Like, remember, Ma Bell was split back in the 70s, whatever it was. And he wanted to separate them out to sort of disengage this anti-competitive, enormous company now. And the Ninth Circuit reversed. So you can thank the Ninth Circuit for that, for allowing Bill Gates to become as wealthy as he did. He would have been wealthy anyway, but he got so wealthy by breaking the rules. And then when he was under oath, he just broke the rules. And then he and Jeffrey Epstein were working with the MIT Media Lab. And they actually, one of the lab operators was told, you know, no one can know who Epstein is. So they called him, what's his name, Voldemort? Who's the guy that they called the one without a name? Who's the guy, Voldemort? What's his, no, good, hang on. So they would refer to him by that name as they were, Voldemort. Remember, must not be named. But anyway, and Bill Gates made a statement, I didn't have any business relationship or friendship with him, with Jeffrey Epstein. I'm reading from a statement. He never donated any money to anything that I know about. Hey, what Bill Gates didn't know when he did this interview is that Ronan Farrow had already obtained emails showing the relationship with MIT Media Lab and Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein working together with Leon Black and the Media Lab's director, Joy Ito, in hiding this and telling the employees at the MIT Media Lab, you can't tell anyone that Epstein's involved. And so Gates would give, you know, millions of dollars and funnel through, and it absolutely involved with Gates. So Gates has had a problem with being honest for a very long time. He had some trouble as a young man, you know, zipping around and, driving without a license. I don't know if he was inebriated or just driving very fast in his fast little fancy car. But from a very young age, he sort of was belligerent, and he has treated the legal system with absolute disdain. His dad represented, I think, pharmaceutical companies. His dad was very successful. Preston Gates and Ellis was the law firm back in Seattle. So Gates grew up very privileged. I think he's very bright. Gates is one of the people who actually is very smart. But he really, what people say on the inside, because remember, I have friends from high school who worked there. I'm from Gig Harbor. Microsoft employs tons of people. And he was rude, bully, he's a bully, and he employed really smart people. He commandeered the brains of others oftentimes to get, you know, the market hold he got. So a lot of rich people do. You know, they hire super smart people. Sometimes they take credit for their work and things like that. But yeah, Gates has been a little troubled. And, there was 7.5 million Blacks and Leon Blacks and Bill Gates' money that Epstein directed to the Media Lab, and only 800,000 was actually reported. This is all in my book, so I'm just going to go
through it. Dina, just a curious question. We know, of course, Michelle is a tranny. What about Bill Gates? What about Bill Gates? Melinda always struck me as a little odd. Is she a gal? Is she a woman?
I don't know her, but I can tell you what I heard from people who met her, that she was adorable. When she came to work for Microsoft, she was tiny, you know, cute, tiny girl, right? Young lady. And
okay.
He just fell for her. She was cute. She was petite, very smart, I heard. I don't know Melinda, though, but no, I think that he just found someone he really liked, and because she was so petite and so cute, that sounds like a natural female to me. So
yeah. No, I buy it. Dina, this has been absolutely fabulous. Brian, I'm delighted you called in. I just gotta say I've enjoyed this so much, Dina. This has been one of the best interviews I've had of all time. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
We'll be right back.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.